You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. Up next, a stem cell update. You know, it's been 3 years, almost to the week, since President Bush announced that he would allow federal funds to be used to conduct research on human embryonic stem cells. The hitch? Those stem cell lines had to have already been in existence on the day, on the hour, on the minute that the president made his announcement. And an estimated 60 lines were available by the president's count 3 years ago. And that decision by the president has been criticized by many different groups, including some religious conservatives and by scientists who say the president is restricting research in an area that could have the potential to help millions of people. And it's become a political issue this year. In a press release issued on the third anniversary of the decision, the John Kerry, John Edwards campaign criticized the president, saying, quote, despite the fact that stem cell research holds immense promise for over 100 million suffering Americans and has broad bipartisan support, the Bush administration continues to stand in the way of progress, unquote. And if elected, Kerry promised to lift the restrictions on using federal funds for the research. Earlier this year, Laura Bush came to her husband's defense. She said the president's policy, quote, makes it possible for researchers to explore the potential of stem cells while respecting the ethical and moral implications associated with this research. And last night on the Larry King Live program, the president defended his stance, saying, quote, I think my position is very reasonable, unquote. Could stem cell research be the issue that sways voters in this election? Polls show that stem cell issue crosses party lines. And what of those 60-some cell lines that the president spoke of 3 years ago? Last night he said there were 22 cell lines. How many are actually available to researchers, and what type of research are they being used for? That's what we'll be talking about for the rest of this segment. And if you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. My guest, Joe Palca, is a science correspondent for NPR News. He joins us from the studios there in Washington. Thanks for being with us today, Joe.
Sure, Ira.
Did this thing come out of nowhere? I mean, is it surprising that stem cells are an issue in this political year?
Well, I am a little surprised. It's not often that a sort of a basic scientific topic gets into the limelight like this one has. And it's a little hard to know, you know, whether it's going to have the kind of traction. I'm still agnostic on the question of whether it's really going to make a difference in the election. John Kerry and John Edwards seem to feel that it's an issue that favors them because they're making noise about it. And the president, I would suspect, has been forced to defend a policy, so that maybe has put him on the defensive. I'm not sure, but it seems to have become an election issue. And you know, there's an interesting issue that I don't think has come to light very much yet. But the people who there's a lot of patient advocate groups who have gotten behind this research, and they've been pushing very hard for a change in policy, but they don't want this to become a Democrat versus Republican issue. Because if the Democrats are somehow presumed to be the party that wants to expand stem cell research and they don't win the White House, then suddenly these groups, which have pushed very hard for these changes, will find themselves with a president who said absolutely not. And so they're anxious that this not get too polarized.
They may have backed the wrong horse when it comes
to... Well, I don't think it's so much that. I think what they're trying to say is, look, this is, as you said just a second ago, it cuts across party lines.
Yeah.
They just don't want to polarize it along party lines to their potential detriment.
Mm-hmm. Well, where does it stand now? The president said last night on Larry King that there were 22 stem cell lines. Are there that many around?
Well, it's been a very soft number. There's clearly, I think the only thing we can say with absolute certainty is they're not the 60 that the president initially thought that would be available. They're just not that many. Whether it's 22, I went onto the NIH National Institutes of Health website, and they list all the lines that they claim are available for shipment today. And I thought I counted up to 28 or 29, but I might have miscounted. Or maybe I called a couple of the places and said, do you actually have lines to ship? For example, University of California, San Francisco has two lines. They said, yes, we've got two. We're shipping them. But I haven't reached everybody, so I haven't actually been able to verify the number. But let's just say it's about two dozen, and I think we can all agree that that's a reasonably close number.
And
the question, of course, is that enough?
Yeah.
And you know, I think the president has an important, he makes an important argument when he says, you know, this is such a new area of research that 22 cell lines are, there's certainly a lot to learn from those 22 cell lines. The counter argument is that because it's such an early line of research, nobody knows yet what the most valuable cell line is going to be. I mean, these cell lines are going to have different characteristics, different growth characteristics. As you know, embryonic stem cells are these cells that can turn into any other kind of cell in the body. And some of these cell lines, just because of the vagaries of nature, are going to be better at turning into brain cells, and some of them are going to be better at turning into skin cells, and some of them are going to be better at turning into blood cells. And so the argument is, because we don't know very much, we want as many as we possibly can get our hands on. That's what the scientists say.
And some of the large university research institutions are not waiting to have to depend on these federal funds, which are not going to come for the stem cell lines they want to work on. They're raising their own money and creating their own lines of stem cells.
Yep, for sure. I mean, Harvard, I think you remember earlier this year, announced that they had 17 new lines. I think the University of California, San Francisco has some private, engaged in some private arrangements to allow them to work on things. And Stanford has a new stem cell center. And San Diego, I think there's one. So yes, they're popping up with some frequency.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the other countries that are major players, Great Britain, for example, have no restrictions compared to the kind of restrictions the president put on.
Well, it's a funny way to put it, actually.
I shouldn't say no restrictions.
But I was going to make the point that they actually have more restrictions because, unlike this country,
which has been
kind of gridlocked in Congress about whether to pass a law requiring or, you know, banning cloning or allowing certain forms of cloning, Great Britain has said all research on human embryos must be approved by something called the Human Embryology and Embryo and Fertilization Authority. And so they actually have a set of restrictions, which they're quite proud of, because they say it means that only ethical research, ethically done and necessary for scientific reasons, will be conducted. So, but you're right. The other side is that the cultural climate seems to support use of embryonic stem cell research and even human cloning research, because as I'm sure you saw, the HFEA, this regulatory agency, has just granted the first license to a research institute in Newcastle upon Tyne to actually try to create a cloned human embryo, not to make a baby, but to use this embryo to study, and I presume, although it doesn't say so explicitly in the license agreement, to make embryonic stem cells.
You know, I think that's a misnomer. Cloned human embryo, that research, they're not really cloning anything. I mean, they're actually just doing an experiment with. There are no two sexes involved, right?
But remember, Ira, that cloning is asexual reproduction.
Right.
You're just making a genetic copy. But now we can get into, you're ready to take the gloves off and get into one of these fisticuff arguments about what's the nature of a cloned embryo and is it really an embryo? I think that if you talk to an embryologist, they'll tell you that something that has a complete set of human chromosomes and is capable of growing into an adult animal can be called an embryo.
Right.
And so that's the presumption. I mean, certainly the embryo that Scottish scientists created when they cloned Dolly wasn't a clone until Dolly was born, but it was a cloned embryo to start with. So, you know, I think it's a cloned embryo. It's a cloned embryo that isn't intended to be transferred into a woman's uterus. So what does a cloned embryo become after it's no longer capable of dividing in the laboratory? I don't know. These are semantic and ethical and moral questions which don't have easy answers.
Well, and for people who believe that that life begins at conception, well, there was no conception except with another cell.
Right. Well, again, I mean, you know, you could touch Dolly when she was around. You can touch other cloned animals. So there is something. Something's being conceived.
Well, I mean, there's the uniting of a sperm and an egg, which is the normal definition.
You're such a traditionalist, Ira. You're supposed to
I'm
be
just
cutting
getting,
edge here,
I'm
Ira.
Getting you're, term you're, papers ready for people. That's
exactly. Okay, you're stuck in the past, my friend.
So, yeah, I'm just a Luddite at heart.
I think we have to. I think this whole thing is making us. It really does, Ira, because this is the issue. You know, there is this idea that there's something unique and special about a human embryo because of its potential to grow into a human being. But what happens when the day comes when you don't even need to take the contents of an egg. You know, cloning now, you take an adult cell and you put it into an enucleated egg, and somehow there are these special proteins inside the egg cytoplasm that allow the nucleus to start dividing, and that's what you get to get a full-grown animal. But what happens when we figure out what all those signals are that are in the egg, and we don't even bother with the egg? We simply, you know, take a cell out of a human being and put these proteins and enzymes and what have you onto them, and the cell starts dividing as if it were an
egg.
Then where are we? Then every cell has the capability to turn into another human being, and then what are you going to do with your traditional view of life? It's very complicated.
It's very interesting stuff to talk about.
It boggles the mind. It really does. It's the potential and the questions are quite... they're not ones that we've thought about and that we've had a chance to chew on for very long. And I think, you know, the science may be moving faster than our moral compass or something, but who knows?
Yeah. You know, there was a lot made in recent weeks about using stem cells to treat Alzheimer's disease. If you talk to, you know, to people who deal in stem cells, then very few people thought that would be the first cure. You hear mostly talking about, diabetes.
Well, diabetes and I think Parkinson's, and the reason there is you're talking about a disease, those diseases which a single cell type, an identified cell type, has been damaged and that it might be replaced. Because of diabetes, you've got the islet cells from the pancreas that are producing the insulin, and Parkinson's, you've got the neurons in the brain that make dopamine. And so those, you know, the whole idea with embryonic stem cells is you have replacement healthy cells that you can put back in ultimately. And so the diseases that are based on a single cell being damaged seem like easier candidates. I think the understanding now on Alzheimer's is that a lot more is going on than just a single cell going bad, and so it's harder to know exactly what to consider.
All right, let's go to the phones. Christine in Elk Grove, California. Hi, Christine.
Well, hi. I'd like to just make a comment, please. The three diseases that are mentioned so frequently are Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes. But there are dozens of other diseases and conditions out there that stem cell research offers hope into, and I'm one of the ones who has a different disease. That's optic neuropathy, which is damage to my optic nerve, which has caused vision loss. And the hope is out there for so many diseases, and I think the public could benefit from knowing that there are other things such as spinal cord regeneration, perhaps, and they're already doing work with cardiac tissue regeneration. There's a wealth of things out there that would benefit all of us, possibly. And I was told that at the Jules Stein Eye Institute when I was down there 2 years ago. They said the only hope for me was someday in stem cell research.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the exciting bit, of course, but unfortunately, you know, no one can yet say which one of those promising or hopeful lines of research is actually going to turn into a treatment. And unfortunately, we know from a lot of other promising areas of research that what seems very promising at the outset may, in fact, not turn out. I think the argument from the scientists is give us a chance to find out.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't be right to say that it's a guarantee that these things will turn into anything. And
anyway, I just wanted to offer up.
Oh, it's very broad.
Diseases which could benefit and conditions which could possibly. That was all. Just a comment.
All right. Thank you very much, and good luck to you, Christine.
Thank you.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Talking with NPR science correspondent Jill Palka this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Where do they, now that this British company has a license, you would expect more companies would get licenses over in Great Britain?
There are. I've heard of a couple of other. In fact, Ian Wilmot, the creator of Dolly, had said at one point that he was planning to apply for license, and I have to confess I don't know if he's actually done that. I think he might have, actually. Mm-hmm. But there's a bunch of people. And, of course, you know, this will not be the first people to actually clone a human embryo if they're successful. That was done earlier this, or it was announced that it was done earlier this year in Science Magazine by some researchers in Korea. Interesting story there, though, that it seems as if the Korean scientists were told by their government to sort of go slow afterwards. So
yeah.
They did the experiments, but they're not doing any more of them.
So is that right? They're not doing any more?
Well, at the last I heard, and I have to confess
it's
been
a
couple of weeks since I've checked in with them, but they had said to me that they were slowing down. One of the members of their team said that they had put some. They were going to study what they had and put some of the other research on hold for the moment.
And they proved that if you just have the right technique, you could do it on the cheap. They didn't have a big fancy lamp, like this.
As far as I know, yeah. I mean, I don't. I haven't actually seen their laboratory, but no, it certainly wasn't a Manhattan Project type of effort. They did it with a laboratory and some resources.
Mm-hmm. And of course they did it with females who were giving up.
The question is, why didn't they try males? And they said, well, we might sometime, but they haven't done it yet. So who knows? It's an interesting world, Ira, and I have to say it seems that somewhere it will go forward. The president has made the point that this research is not banned for private funding. You know, in this country, the limitations he's put on this kind of work is strictly for people receiving federal funds.
Right.
And so there are private companies, and there may be more private companies, and there are large private philanthropies, the Howard Hughes Medical Institution. You know, that some of these other organizations have stepped in and said, we see a value in this and we'll fund it. And I don't know if it's a cynical or pragmatic or what do you want to call it, but if somebody does come up with a cure, like for one of the, you know, like for Christine or one of her colleagues who needs, or, you know, fellows who needs treatment, if there's a cure, that may change the equation.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of money to be made in a company like in Great Britain, let's say, comes up with something by using their own and going ahead, then you'll know. I've heard the same opinion expressed by scientists and organizations. The dam will break, so to speak. And pressure will be on to a world, you know, to loosen up those restrictions.
Well, it'll be hard. I think we're the pragmatism of people saying, look, I'm alive, and I have this debilitating disease, and if there's something that's going to make my life more tolerable, or my father's life, or my daughter's life, or whatever, you know, some close family member. I think that trumps a concern about a potential maybe someday if question of an embryo growing into a clone, which we don't like. I don't know. As I say, these are complicated issues, and I think that it's important to be very respectful of the variety of strongly held moral opinions in this world and this area, and it's why it's been a difficult story to cover, actually, as a reporter, because you have to walk very carefully and try to say what is and not speculate about what might be. But I think there's a pragmatism that may take hold at some point.
Well, thank you very much, Joe, as always, for taking time to talk with us.
It's a treat for me always to talk to you, and
thank you.
I'm glad we get to do it.
We'll talk again. NPR science correspondent Joe Palca with us to talk about stem cell research. We're going to take a short break, change gears a little bit, and when we come back, we're going to say goodbye to an old friend. So stay with us. We'll be right back.